Welcome back. Welcome if this is your first time. This is Whitewater. I'm Adam. I'm one of the pastors here. And it's exciting to be here with you. If you're here today, you've caught us in smack dab and in a sermon series entitled The Good and Beautiful Life that goes along with our God dreams that we've been going through for the last year. Okay? The Good and Beautiful series is actually written by a man named James Bryan Smith. Brilliant dude with an incredible heart. And these books are born out of his life lived. These books are born out of his trying to see Jesus rightly, trying to have the right narratives about who God is and who he is in existence in that. And so that's what we're getting into. That's what you're into for the last year. That's what you're into for this year. And it's exciting. It's exciting. Last week, we tackled learning to live without lust. That's a big one, isn't it? I can tell you, if you're new here, it was real quiet in the room last week. Okay? Which leads me to believe that none of you struggle with it. Okay? This week is another heavy hitter that doesn't get enough weight, I think, within the Christian church, within the church in general, within spirituality, within seeing Jesus for who he is, and it's learning to live without lying. How you doing today? Good. Anybody give that response this morning? Did anybody give that response being completely wrecked inside and not good? Interesting. I do that a lot. I catch myself just automatically replying. It was funny, Caleb was asked a question. Caleb was asked a question this morning, and he was back at the soundboard. And he just started speaking before his brain caught up with what's actually asked of him. And he just started shouting out answers. 4, 5, wait, what did you say? And I'm just standing there looking at this like, this is crazy. It was awesome, but I think so often we just give patented responses because we don't want people to think that we're less than good, right? Most of the time. There were some instances when I was a child, just one that I can remember. I'm glad some of you were chuckling and laughing, okay? There used to be this Tide bottle. And on the Tide bottle, this new technology that came out, there was this little clear plastic strip that you could see how full your Tide was or how empty your Tide was. And I remember watching the commercials for this and thinking, that's the sweetest thing in the world. Because the rest of the bottle's orange, and then there's this clear stripe. I didn't get out much, okay? And I remember going downstairs into the laundry room. And I remember, well, I'm going to see how this works. I know Mom bought that new bottle, and I know it's got this little window on it. And I dump it upside down when I didn't realize the cap was off of it. It just floods our laundry room with detergent. And I drop it out of being terrified. I am going to die. You know, my parents are not going to be pleased with this one. And I run out. Well, if you know anything about detergent, it pools rather quickly and just kind of expands. So I run through the detergent. Footprints. Slipping. And I run to this little tent that we had set up in our basement, my little play area, and that was going to protect me from the wrath of my mother. This little thin-walled tent. She's never going to get me in here, okay? She comes down. I don't tell her this. She comes down and sees this happening. Adam? Yes, Mom? What did you do? Nothing. And you could track the footprints that went from the stone painted concrete laundry room that we had all the way on the carpet, all the way to the tent. Nothing, Mom. Why? What's going on? Well, it's just really weird. The laundry room's covered in soap, detergent. And there's footprints in it that lead to this tent. Just thought you might know something about it. Mm-mm. What? She still doesn't know it was me to this day. It's amazing, okay? But we go from like blatant lies like that to the answering the question, how you doing? Oh, I'm good, I'm fine. How you doing? I'm great. Lying is pervasive in a lot of areas in our world, and we don't really want to acknowledge it. We don't want to look at it. And what keeps us from being honest? That's what we're going to look at. What keeps us from being honest? What keeps us from telling the truth? What keeps us from being people that our yes is yes and our no is no? Sadly, we all lie a lot more than we realize because we have a strong and intricate system of rationalization, right? Let's rationalize the crap out of this. Well, I only said that because, right? Liars and cheaters. I'm guessing I'm not the only person here that lies. See if you ever said any of these lies. Yes, I have read that book or seen that movie. Harmless, right? Yes, let's definitely get together soon. Oh, you guys have used that one. He or she is in a meeting. She's not home. No, that outfit doesn't make you look fat. As my brother would say, no, those pants don't make your butt look fat. Your butt does. Right? Right? He's a great man. He's also married. I don't know how, but it's amazing. Okay? According to a study conducted by Robert Feldman, in a 10-minute conversation, we tell an average of 3.3 lies. Once every 3 minutes or so, the most shocking study I've ever seen concluded that we are lied to every 5 minutes, or an average of 200 times a day. Author Ralph Keyes, who has written an excellent book on lying, concludes that some form of deception occurs nearly two-thirds of all conversations. In another study, 59% of 2,000 American parents admitted to lying to their children on a regular basis. Things like this. Our cable company doesn't get that TV show. Right? Oh, you've used this one, right? Oh, yeah, we don't get that channel. We don't get that show. If you touch that button, it could shock you. Right? Oh, you've used that one. You will definitely die, right? The candy store is closed. Anybody use that one? Now that we got that Rocket Fizz, man, that's just catnip for kids, right? The candy store is closed, and yet nearly all parents do not want their children to lie and have no tolerance when our children lie to us, right? Gets under our skin. Keyes, who did the study, concludes if the research on this subject is credible, nearly all of us tell lies, and far more often than we realize. Another author, David Callahan, broadens the category of lying to include cheating, which is a form of lying. Cheating involves deception with the intent to gain something. Consider some of the following examples that Callahan cites. Callahan says this: many wealthy parents take their kids diagnosis shopping. You know what this is? It's that they go to multiple doctors until they find one who say their children has a slight learning disability, because an official diagnosis of a disability will allow their kids more time on the SATs. Meaning, a better score may get them into a better college. We've kind of seen some of that college scandal, right? With only that involved money, mainly. Personal officers estimate that nearly 25% of the information they see on resumes is not just padding, but gross information, right? We try to make ourselves like Jesus on those. I healed the sick. I fed the poor. I came back from the dead. I would like to work at McDonald's, please. Right? It's just gross information. As many as 2 million Americans have illegal offshore bank accounts that they use to evade taxes. Now, some of you don't have offshore bank accounts, but I know a lot of you do evade taxes. We got into trouble once as Whitewater, and it sparked this financial backing up within our records. The IRS was saying, hey, we see this money paid out to these workers for services, and you guys reached a certain threshold, so we need you to fill out, was it a 1099? For each one of these individual workers, because they reached this threshold, and we were kind of claiming ignorance as the church when we first started. Like, well, you didn't know that. We didn't, I believe. I believe it wasn't a lie. But we started going to these workers that were hired through one of our guys who actually is deceased now, and they all were tax evaders. Every single one of them said, I'm not going to give you my information or my Social Security number. And I said, this is going to make us look terrible. And then it was just radio silence from these workers, right? So it's a thing. Thousands of Americans are knowingly pirating cable TV. Americans are now stealing $6 billion a year worth of paid television. A 2002 undercover sting operation in New Jersey found 350 examples of fraudulent practices at auto repair centers, mainly for the performance of unnecessary repairs. Some estimates of the cost nationwide for auto repair fraud ran as high as $40 billion a year. By the way, they only examined 6 auto repair centers in that study. Don't live there, okay? Okay? Callahan concludes, Americans are not only cheating more in areas, but are also feeling less guilty about it. Something seems to have shifted in the last few decades. And yet, in study after study, people still consider truth-telling to be one of the most important of all virtues. People feel violated when they discover that they have been lied to. And yet, we are a nation of liars. We are in conflict about this matter, excusing our lies at the same time that we are appalled by the prevalence of dishonesty. Man, that's interesting, isn't it? Interesting. We need to actually get inside this matter and discover the cause of lying for us. As we've talked about our narratives several times through The Good and Beautiful God and through The Good and Beautiful Life, our narratives drive a lot of what we do and who we are and how we respond to the world around us. Our behavior is rooted in our narratives, so if we are a nation of liars, there must be a narrative deep beneath the surface that encourages us, or at least permits us to lie. And it sounds something like this: I don't want to have to deal with someone else's hurt feelings by telling them the truth. Anybody? It's easier to just be everybody's friend. It was just a white lie, I meant no harm. If I told the truth, I'd get into trouble. The ends justify the means. Anybody ever said that? The essence of all the excuses is utilitarian. The utilitarian narrative says, I am important and my well-being is my main mission. That sounds like a lot of self. That sounds like a lot of me, I. And it sounds pretty void of God. Sounds pretty void of looking to God, trusting in God. The two main things that drive us to lie is, number one, fear. Fear of what will happen if we tell the truth. And number two is the desire for personal gain if we lie. It's pretty interesting. Fear, most of our lying is fear-based, and we lie to avoid trouble. Has that been anybody? I thought I was going to get pulled over. We were going to Fort Collins. And we got into this weird construction area, and this car drove like an idiot, okay, because it wasn't me. And they were in my way, and I was going 5 over, and they weren't. They were being law-abiding citizens. So then I go up to 15 over and overtake this car, all the while there's this state patrolman in Colorado, sitting right here. So I kind of slam on the brakes. Oh, good, I don't want to get caught. And we start talking about the process of getting pulled over and the process of telling the truth to the officer when you get pulled over has never really benefited us or worked in our favor, has it? Do you know why I pulled you over? Yep. Why? I was driving 15 over. Because I hate this person that was in front of me. Couldn't stand them. I'm going to give you a ticket. Okay. It never has boded well. It never has worked in my favor to just tell the truth to an officer. Now, not all officers have ticketed me when I've been pulled over, but there's definitely a disservice, or if you can be dishonest, no, I didn't. Isn't the speed limit 95 here on a 2-lane highway? No. Or I'm going to a funeral. Anybody use that one? Or whatever excuses we come up with, but it's fear, avoiding trouble, the fear of getting what we actually deserve if we speak truthfully to one another, if we tell the truth to another person. You make me feel like I'm not worth anything. And the conversation then that comes after that, and the hard looks that we have to take as we look into one another's eye, you devalue me as a person, speaking truth that way. Or speaking truth in, you know what? You don't see God rightly in this. When we start exposing blind spots, when we start speaking truthfully to one another, when we start exposing things within one another, it's that fear-based. It would be easier if we didn't. It would be easier if we just kept our mouth shut. It would be easier if we just spun it in a way that didn't hurt so bad. Right? It was the fear of my mom finding out that I dumped all this detergent on the floor that kept me from being truthful with her, even though I was caught, whatever the color of Tide is, blue-footed, right? There was no getting out of that. We fear the consequence of telling the truth. Children, by the way, are usually terrible liars. It takes years to perfect the practice. All of my family has poker faces. And sometimes we like to stand on an injustice that one of us has given one another, but we are such bad liars, even my children, that we have these poker faces. Eyebrows wiggle, or just a weird kind of smirk. I'm serious, I'm mad. Right? We're just terrible at it. Effective lying involves overriding our bodies. Even then, it's difficult to fool a lie detection machine. Our bodies seem to be opposed to lying. That's why the terrible poker face. Why are your eyebrows wiggling? Why is your nostril, one nostril flared? Right? And the second one is fear, and the first one is fear, and the second one is desire. We also lie when we think we might gain something we want. Anyone? No, Hudson? You don't do that? That's good, buddy. Keep on that path. But if I find out otherwise from your mom afterwards, I'm going to be mad. He just smiles. He knows. Whatever. Shut up, Adam. Over the past few years, we increasingly hear stories of people who lied on their resumes in order to get a certain job. Desires propel them to lie. People lie about their age. No. How old are you, Diane? Atta girl, come on. People lie about their age. How about this one, their marital status? Whitewater, I know you. I know sometimes where you go. I know how easily that ring slips off. Their education, their occupation, in order to get something they want. You know, as a pastor, I find myself lying about my occupation. And it's lying by omission. Because usually if I say I'm a pastor, people start apologizing immediately for their behavior. Which with me, a lot of people, the first thing that comes to mind is not pastor, okay? You're probably thinking that right now if you're new here. What? Is this like a special speaker? Okay? Did I come on a crazy Sunday? Right? But I lie by omission. What do you do? Well, you know, I'm in public relations. Or when I was in when I was doing music and worship, I would just say I'm a professional musician. Really? You must be rich. Oh yeah. No, I'd never go that far. But I would lie by omission just because I didn't want to have to deal with the apologies. And sometimes I'm in a hurry and I don't want to have to deal with theological questions or people putting their burdens onto me. And so I would lie. In the airport, on a bus. I know other pastors, they just love telling people they're a pastor, and they get into these great theological discussions on the plane and just talk nonstop. That sounds terrible. Let me put on my headphones. Let me just listen to some music. But I find myself slipping into that and lying in those times so I can get what I want. It benefits me to be silent and not have to talk to a stranger. It benefits me to not have them feel bad because they're sitting by a man of the cloth. Right? The false imperative narratives that we talked about I think it was a couple weeks ago. Remember those? They actually contribute to the need to lie. Statements like, it's all about me, and I am alone. The first clause justifies all of our actions. The second clause forces us to use our own resources, which are limited, to get what we want. One of our fleshy resources is deception, just like what we were just talking about. We can be sure that we are not operating in the kingdom when we choose to lie. That hurts. Just like last week, I love Jesus when it comes to learning to live without lust, but yet I continually devalue people and use them for my own ends. Do you really love Jesus at that point when you devalue his creation? Do you really love Jesus? Are you really in kingdom living if you continue to lie? I don't like looking at this thing. I don't like talking like that. I don't like asking myself that question. We are running on our own strength, and it can and does often work for a time. We lie on resumes to get jobs. People lie about the sale price and make more money. And it's sad because that means we're not in sync with our partnership in the kingdom. But we're getting what we want, right? And that's all we need to justify the action to lie. Just that small little piece, we're getting what we want. Or some would say we're getting what we deserve. There are two main reasons that we lie and we think we need to. And one is in order to get what we want, and two is to avoid something that we don't want. And if the universe revolves us around us, then lying is justified. We now have a narrative that allows us to sleep at night. Unfortunately, we are destroying the integrity of our souls. According to Jesus, even if we gain the whole world but lose our soul, we have lost what is truly important. Jesus deals with this issue of lying on the Sermon on the Mount that we've been going through the Good and Beautiful Life. And it's found in Matthew 5, 33 through 37. It's going to be on the screen. If you guys have Bibles, I want you to follow along with me. If you have a Bible app, pull it out, look it up. It says this. These are Jesus' words. Again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn. But I say to you, do not take an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not take an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. Let what you say be simply yes or no. Anything more than this comes from evil. Jesus is dealing with the issue of swearing, which does not refer to cursing or using foul language, profane language, but making a verbal promise that what is said is true, such as taking an oath. Once again, he creates a distinction between what is considered righteous behavior and the kind of behavior expected of those who live in the kingdom of God. In Jesus' day, there was multiple times that you would swear an oath, like buying a cow. I swear that this cow is whole. Every teat works, right? bunch of immature people. He said, Teet. I don't know, that's what they call him, right? Utters? Every teat works. It was in everyday business transactions. Swear by God or swear upon his own life. He was telling the truth about the condition of the cow. Today, some establish their credibility, and some swear that what they are saying is true. I swear to God, man, this happened. Anybody use that? That seemed more like a youthful phrase. Swear on your mom, okay. I swear I threw that football over the mountains. Right? I kicked a 7,000-yard field goal. Right? I drove 200 miles an hour in my Ford Tempo. The speedometer capped out at 85, by the way, okay? But man, we could spin a manly yarn, right? Right? Jesus is teaching, and this is very clear, we do not need to swear at all, not by God or by heaven or on our own life. As he's been doing, Jesus continues to address the heart, the inner person, the place from which all things flow. The standard of righteousness in Jesus' day was clear. You can tell lies and not be liable until you get caught. Isn't that a fun day? I remember getting caught, as you know from the lust chapter, the issues with pornography that I have struggled with and dealt with. I got sloppy at one point. I thought I was a computer genius. I was like, I'm Bill Gates. No one will ever catch me, right? And I got sloppy one time, and my wife comes home and opens the laptop, and there she is seeing for the first time the things that I view and viewed. And I can tell you that's a terrible moment for a wife who thinks her husband is someone else. And there was that brief moment when she said from the back room where the computer was, "What is this?" And I remember thinking to myself, I can get out of this. I don't know, it must have been our 2-year-old son. He really knows how to work the internet. And there was that brief moment, I don't know, baby, but I couldn't speak anything but truth. That's me, I messed up. That's me. And I didn't want to look at that like, that's me. Because I wasn't proud of me. I wasn't excited about, that's who I really am. And now all of a sudden people see that portion of me. Someone else knows about that. You can tell lies and not be liable until you get caught, but if you lie under oath, you are guilty. Jesus, as always, is aiming at the higher, something higher for a new kind of person with a new kind of character. He is saying, under oath or not, those who live in the kingdom can and should tell the truth. That should be us every day, day in and day out. Now let's not confuse this. The radical nature of Jesus' words was not that we should never take an oath, but that all of our speech should be honest. It should be genuine. It should be true. So if you ever get called into a court hearing, Jesus said, I can't take an oath. Did they swear on the Bible anymore? I know that's kind of, maybe in Wyoming, right? But I know that's kind of being taken out within the courtrooms. But Jesus isn't just reducing it to this, oh, don't take an oath in court. All of our speech should be honest, genuine, true, and trustworthy. And yes, that means a yes that means a yes, and a no that means a no. Jesus says in the kingdom we are obligated to tell the truth in all circumstances. The kingdom does not run on deception. Can I read that again? The kingdom does not run on deception. It simply will not. But this doesn't mean we should never take an oath. Jesus is saying, become the kind of person who naturally tells the truth. Do this often and consistently, and people will not need you to swear because you always tell the truth. You're just always there. They can depend on that. They can depend on your honesty. So what does living as an apprentice of Jesus in his glorious kingdom have to do with lying? Let's read some passages of Scripture. In Titus 1:2, it says, God is truth, he cannot lie. In John 16:13, it says, and those who follow him must walk and talk in truth. And the Spirit of God not only leads us into truth, but is truth. 1 John 5:6, kingdom people are those who are led by or walk in the Spirit. Therefore, they must walk in the truth. The Apostle John prays his fellow Christians for doing so. He said this, I was overjoyed when some of the friends arrived and testified to your faithfulness to the truth, namely how you walk in the truth. And Paul urged those under his care to always tell the truth, so then putting away falsehoods, let all of us speak the truth to our neighbors, for we are members of one another. That's found in Ephesians 4:25. This is actually the baseline, the starting point for an apprentice of Jesus. We begin by putting away falsehood, not lying, or in the positive. We speak the truth. We do this because we are members of one another. Lying to another is lying to myself. Christ dwells in both of us. Do you see how this affects community? Do you see how this affects how we live with one another here? Do you see how this affects when you have issue with someone and you tell them you don't? Do you see how when you hold your cards so close to the vest that everything's fine even though you're dying inside and you won't let anybody in to help? By simply saying, I'm okay. I'm good. Nothing's wrong with me. People who dwell in the kingdom of heaven will find lying less and less a part of their lives. That is because the kingdom addresses all of the reasons we give for lying. First, in the life with God, the kingdom, we can let go of our fears. Man, the song we sang, talking about giving us our daily bread. Caleb's rant that I love. Talked about not... I forgot what you said. This happens all the time. I'm kidding. Talked about not being concerned about things that he thought he needed, but being concerned with the things that God gives him because God knows his needs. Being okay with those things. Not living in fear of where that bread's going to come from. Not living in fear of where's my clothes going to come from. Not living in fear of a lot of different things. We don't need to fear that what will happen as long as we are living under his rule and his reign. Telling the truth may cause discomfort or embarrassment, but we live with a God who protects us and provides for us. If we choose to lie, we are not in harmony with the kingdom. And losing that is so much worse than the consequences of telling the truth. Understanding our identity in Christ helps us in the area of lying. Paul urged the Colossians, he says this, do not lie to each other, since you have taken off your old self with its practices. Notice the second clause he used, since you have taken off the old self, since Jesus dwells and delights in us, we strive to put an end to the deceptions in our lives. This way of lying, if you are a Jesus person, if you are a person that has said yes to Jesus and are claiming you love Jesus and are claiming that Jesus is all and everything you need, that lying is the old self that you've taken off or should have. We don't just sprinkle Jesus into our jacked up life. Jesus is the everything. Jesus is the only thing. We need to understand, and you've heard this phrase before, that the kingdom is not in trouble and we who stand in it are never in trouble. And therefore, we can risk telling the truth and handle the consequences of truth. So how do we combat this together? This lying piece. One of the most important ways we can do it is to improve our speech. How are we talking to one another? How are we talking to the world around us? A lot of times, if there is some discomfort in the world, we want to give every other answer but Jesus. That's not truth. Or that's temporary. Temporary fix. We need to begin giving grace in our speech. And what does that look like? It looks like kingdom encouragement. Being in sync with the kingdom, being in sync with who God is, being in sync with everything that He is within you. Being a friend that doesn't just give platitudes like, well, God will never give you more than you can handle. You want to get punched in the mouth? Say that in a time of trouble to someone. You want to wound someone? Go ahead and use that phrase. But kingdom encouragement puts us in a place where we can remember who God is and who we are and whose we are within the kingdom. Again, like I've said in the past, we've talked about this around the dinner table of stopping one another when we're on a rant or stopping one another when we are just wildly out of control. And I can tell you it doesn't work 100% of the time right in the moment. It doesn't cure or shake us out of what we need. There's a lot of times when I like to dwell in self-pity and injustice. Anybody else? Don't talk to me about that. But we use that phrase, the kingdom is not in trouble. Adam, I know you're going through a hardship right now, but you need to understand the kingdom is not in trouble, and those who dwell in it are never in trouble. But my situation looks like trouble. One of the greatest things to do is when anybody is in trouble or their world is crumbling around them is tell them to go read the book of James. Has anybody read the book of James? It does not bring you comfort, does it, at times? It kind of pokes the bear because it's a people that are wrecked in a world and what they want to do is respond as our old selves would. With justice. Vengeance. Eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. And James addresses all of these issues, and he says, look, I know that you were wronged, and I know you're being imprisoned for wrong things, and I know that your life is in turmoil right now, but God. Let me call you back to the proper response. Let me call you back to who you are and whose you are and how you need to be operating. And that'll come through kingdom encouragement. But there's another one. It's also kingdom kindness. A lot of times it's just speaking with one another with amazing sensitivity and gentleness. God's kingdom and our kindness, being able to give involved, reflective feedback to people in times of trouble, which includes active listening. It includes being able to respond. It includes being savvy. It includes being able to say, God, praying in that moment, give me right words to speak in this. A lot of times my tendency is just reactionary comments. Well, you want to know what I think right off the top of my head? It will be terrible. But I've never had it go off the rails when I've prayed about it at first. Craig and I were talking about doing warfare with our spouses, which never happens, just to be clear. And Craig said a phrase once, and he said, I've never been in a state of regret when I have taken the time to pause and consult God about the situation. And sadly, a lot of times that just means we have to shut up as men and have to be quiet. Other times it gives us time to collect and be able to speak kingdom kindness into our situation. Because it's not going to be our words. It's going to be God's words. In the kingdom, we begin by putting away falsehood. But as an apprentice of Jesus, much more is expected of our speech. Telling the truth is a great start, but as we move further into the kingdom living, we begin to use our tongues to bless and encourage. One of the things I admire about my wife, just going to brag on her for a little bit, can I do that? Is she is a beautician, which means she's basically a licensed counselor. Right? If you're a bartender, you're the same thing, right? You're a licensed counselor. Whether you like it or not, there are people who are bringing you their issues and bringing you their woes. And a lot of times, people will come in and just unload burdens, unload issues, unload on the people that they hate or the people that they have issue with. And what's amazing is 9 times out of 10, the people that they have issue with don't know that these people have issue with them. Anyone? Because they have talked about it with everybody except that one person. And so my wife is in this practice, and she doesn't get it right all the time, but she's in this practice of elevating the conversation, speaking good, trying to elevate the conversation to a kingdom level instead of this, I can jump in and just be like, yeah, that person sucks. I can commiserate with you. That situation is awful. You're justified to be completely, lividly angry and live in there for years. Or we can start being these kingdom people that we actually are, that our yes is yes and our no is no, and we can raise the bar of conversation with people with our speech and not perpetuate the lie any longer with folks, even with ourselves. And that comes with community that we've talked about so much here. Being able to call out one another, being able to call each other to higher ways of living, to kingdom life, to kingdom living. So I'm praying as you're hearing these teachings over the last few weeks, as you're hearing them over the last few months, that you are learning and getting tools for how we are called to operate, tools for how we are called to be here in Laramie, or wherever it is you're headed after school, or whatever it is you're headed off to go work somewhere else. That is who you are called to be as kingdom people. Together we're going to get through this. Amen? So God, help us with this. Help us with this dishonesty. Help us with fear. Help us with recognizing where our lying comes from individually. Help us see people as you see people. Help us see our role, that when we lie, God, we are lying to ourselves as well as others. And that doesn't reflect your kingdom at all. God, may we be truthful with one another. May we be truthful with the world around us. May we be truthful in our taxes and business dealings. May we be truthful in our speech. May we be truthful in all areas of our world. God, may we no longer deceive one another in this community or with our friends of where we are at spiritually, emotionally. God, so many things that we've heard about suicide within the last few weeks, and people had no clue about where these folks were, because they weren't being truthful. God, we want to be a people where our yes is yes and our no is no, and that only comes through abiding in your kingdom. So God, give us grace as we go forward here today, as we live out your truth, and as we learn to live without lying. It's in your name we pray, and everybody said, Amen. Jeff Parkins, everybody.
So I got to let you guys know about something very exciting that's been going on. That's been 2 years in the making. And so to start this off, I just want to let you know, for those of you that haven't been with us very long or maybe don't know, Whitewater is an elder-led church. It's not led just by Adam or just by Craig or our pastors. It's led by a group of people that seek God's will in moving and developing the church forward as a group of elders that then pour into leaders and mentor other leaders that grow up into the church and continue on. And so as we continue in this process of growing Whitewater that's now 10 years old and developing a healthy church, requires us to take a focus on making sure our pastors are healthy as well, and a component of pastoral care then. So this process started a couple of years ago, specifically around sabbatical and terms for our pastors and what this means and what does a sabbatical mean, which that word can bring a lot of baggage for some folks. For those in the university, you may be familiar with what sabbatical means for professors. For those of you that have been at churches, you may have seen things that have been healthy and unhealthy about sabbaticals. And so as we started to pray and work through this as elders a couple of years ago, and then many of you may have seen last year, been part of last year, is we kind of did a test run, I would say, in a direct response to what was going on in the life of specifically Adam and Sherry as our pastors then. It brings us to this year and to this moment. And so coming up here, we are going to move now into this actual model that we've set up for sabbatical as a component of pastoral care, where the Coops are going to be away for 3 months. And this might seem scary and this might seem big, and folks I know are probably thinking, yeah, but they were gone a month last year, and what is this, and why 3 months, and why so long, and what are we going to do? And I tell you, it's going to be okay. And there's going to be things for us to fill in. There's going to be change and some adaptation. But this is something important and key for the health of our church and the health of our pastors. Not just Adam, but his wife, his family, together. And so there's a couple of components of the sabbatical time coming up that we've talked and prayed through and the keys that I want to share with you this morning. So first, the term that we're looking at is May, June, and July. That the Coops are going to be away. There may be periods, as we see how this goes, where they may stop in and they may be here on a Sunday morning and they may choose to partake in certain aspects, but that's going to be coming in as a community and being able to worship as a family. So I encourage you, if you see them here, let's keep business off the table. Talk to them, encourage them, spend community with them. But if there's a need or something you need to share, seek one of us out as elders. Come find me, find Caleb, find Craig. We'd be happy to take the time to spend with you on that. The core components of the sabbatical period going forward, as we spoke with Adam on just what his needs are and what we see as elders and leaders of kind of speaking into what we see as a need for him specifically, I'd say there's three key aspects. So one is rest and restoration, which is a core at the word sabbatical, and in particular Sabbath and taking a time for rest. It's easy as you work in people and you're in the weeds and your head is down and you're buried to just get worked up and get buried in it and never have a chance to stop and take care of yourself and step back and unwind from everything that goes into that. The next one is a period of evaluation and development and work on spiritual disciplines, the chance to step back, reevaluate daily life and daily spirit and disciplines and work new ones in, seek new disciplines that maybe have been lost or put to the wayside. In particular, we had a 24-hour elder retreat here at the beginning of this weekend and spent some time going through the Common Book of Prayer. And it's something that Adam expressed a change in his prayer life from early on in joining ministry and the emotion and the effect and the spirit behind prayer and changing to more kind of in-the-moment popcorn prayer kind of things, but intentionally seeking and developing that as one example of an aspect of this. The last one is seeking education and guidance and vision. And so this is a chance for the teacher to become the student, to go learn under people that have wisdom to provide, or even just see other way things are done to bring things back into Whitewater to continue to build and grow as God gives us vision and movement in this church. It's a chance to again unwind and get out of the weeds and be able to work on and spend time on vision. I picture my background is engineering, and so I don't know if any of you guys know what a flywheel is, but you put energy into this wheel, and it's this big, massive wheel that you put a bit of energy into it, and it spins up, and it spins up, and it spins up, and moves faster and faster, and stores more energy. And so it's easy when you're in the weeds to constantly feed that flywheel of crisis and weeds and never pick your head up to stop and find vision. And so it's going to take time, which is why we've set aside 3 months at God's guidance in this to unwind that flywheel of being in crisis and being in the everyday response to then relax and be able to build up these spiritual disciplines and develop and seek spiritual formation. So as we move into this period, like I said, it's going to be May, June, July. There are needs and there's going to be gaps and there's things that we're going to be asking for folks in the body to help us take on. As elders, we'll be taking on the teaching schedule and continuing to work through the Good and Beautiful Life as we go into the Good and Beautiful Church. If you need anything that you would normally seek Adam out for, seek one of us out for. We're eager to meet with you. I'm eager to meet with you. I know a lot of people seek Adam and Craig as the pastors and the folks that you see regularly on a Sunday morning and during the week that have office hours. All of our contact info is on the website. Find me after this if you want it. Text me, call me. I'm eager to speak and meet with you. I'd be happy to. So we'll continue to talk about it over the next couple of weeks as May approaches. But if you have any questions or if this is scary or concerns or you feel challenged to step and say, how do we fill gaps for 3 months? Come find me, find Caleb, find Craig. And we'd be happy to bring you in along this as we continue to grow and create a healthy church that continues to make other churches and other leaders as we pour out.